Recycling is one of the ways many of us do our bit to help save the planet, but are we going to have to rethink how we do it? Welcome. We're glad you're part of the full story on WSHU and streaming online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak, and a short time back, we had a program about recycling. Many of you responded and had comments or questions about the recycling programs in our region. If you recall, some of our guests at that time had some concerns about the recycling programs and China's role in what we do. Well, to put it simply, they were right. It appears we're going to have to change what we do and our approach to recycling. We have a number of guests with us today, but as always, we'd like to hear from you. Do you recycle? Do you make the effort? Do you think it makes a difference? And are you willing to spend more time going through your refuse to separate the recycling materials? And here's another question for you. Do you think more fees should be slapped on some materials to encourage all of us to recycle more? You can send us your comments. You probably know our email. It's tfs@wshu.org, or you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at Full Story WSHU. You can leave comments there. And you could always leave us a voicemail at 833-CALL-TFS. As I said, we have a number of guests today. Ben Blake is with us. He's the mayor of Milford, sitting across from me. And I'd like to start right now with Kevin Maloney, who's Director of Communications and Member Relations for the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Mayor, it's good to have you here.
Hello.
Kevin, how would you describe the recycling efforts in our region? Are they in trouble?
Certainly in your region, and almost without exception across the state of Connecticut, recycling has been flipped on its head. For many years, towns were able to generate revenue from recyclables. Now it has turned to a major expense. Bigger cities such as Bridgeport and Stamford and Waterbury, large suburban communities such as Milford and Fairfield, are now having to allocate a revenue item in their budget, and that's going to be problematic trying to put budgets together going forward for July. And from CCM's perspective, it points to how there needs to be another source or sources of revenue besides the property tax, because here's yet another example of where towns were able to at least generate some revenue, and that is going away.
Mayor, same question. Is Milford in trouble when it comes to recycling?
I see it as an opportunity, not just for the state of Connecticut, but the whole country, to invest in new initiatives to get a secondary market for recycled products. As Kevin mentioned, as you mentioned, China, back in 2017, stopped the flow of recyclables into their country for good, for bad. It gives the United States an opportunity to invest in better ways to recycle all those goods that we had previously sent overseas.
Mm.
But yes, it has always been a green initiative, recycling. But for the last 10 years, we had made it a green initiative, meaning that we were receiving some funds, albeit a small amount, but it was always a cash positive initiative, not a big burden on the municipalities.
Kevin, what got us to this point? Was it specifically China?
The notion of China withdrawing from the market, and a side issue is the notion of China not accepting recyclables with more than 5% contaminants in it. And it does point to something that perhaps towns, you know, want to try and do better, because it's just a good practice to, you know, keep those non-recycling items out of recycling. But that takes a lot of effort and a lot of education, as Mayor Blake can speak to much better than I, that trying to keep your recycling stream pure is also a big challenge.
Now, when you say pure, do you mean cleaning the materials or making sure that only the proper materials go in?
Well, it's certainly probably a combination of the two. What I was pointing to in my comments was the notion of non-recyclables sort of getting into the recycling bin.
And to some degree, it's even the recycling process. When you dump the recyclables into a garbage compactor, the glass, for example, breaks apart and contaminates other recyclable products as well, making it more difficult to separate at the single stream source.
Hey, now, I just have to give you a little personal background. Every Saturday morning, I go down to my transfer station. Where I live, it's a lot easier for me to take all my stuff and just bring it down. So Saturday mornings, it's part of the routine. I pull in there and it's a huge line getting into the transfer station. And almost everybody is listening to an NPR affiliate, which is kind of funny. But I do my thing, and they have single stream recycling. And I see some things being thrown in there that are unbelievable. They should never even have been considered. And people just take it and dump it in. And I look at it and I go, no, there has to be a lot more education for us who are doing this.
Absolutely. Education is key, but you hit the nail on the head. Connecticut is very provincial. We have 169 different ways to recycle and dispose of our solid waste. So the DEEP, the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, does try to unify all of these different processes that each town has implemented into one umbrella strategy. But everybody has a little bit of a different way to dispose of their solid waste as well as their recycling.
Kevin, is that part of the problem? Is that we're all doing our own thing?
Certainly, there's a degree of that. You know, the state has worked hard at trying to introduce, and successfully so, to a large degree, recycling across Connecticut and get everyone's percentage of recycling up. But certainly the notion of things getting into the stream that shouldn't be there. You know, I myself am guilty. I know that I put broken glassware from my cupboard into recycling. And I know now that only, food and beverage glass containers can go in there. You can't put window glass in. You can't put, broken drinking glasses in there. So it always needs to be an ongoing education effort, even for those people who are cooperative and want to do the right thing. They may not be aware enough.
And the biggest offending product is plastic bags. Plastic bags cannot go in single-stream recycling anywhere in the state of Connecticut. Even if there is a number on the bottom of the plastic bag that has a recycling logo, plastic bags of any shape, size, color cannot go in recycling. It clogs up the sorting system. It clogs up the machinery. It is a hazard for our recycling process.
Kevin, do you think from what you've read and from what people have told you, will single stream recycling go the way of the dinosaurs?
My personal feeling is I don't think so. We've entered a new era where there's going to be some time and effort taken to try to find new local markets to replace what had been going to China. So it presents a new challenge. I mean, this is probably, and the mayor may feel differently, just to offer out the thought that this is probably the biggest change in recycling since its inception. And Connecticut was up to the challenge back when recycling was introduced. And I think between the smart local officials that exist in the 169 towns and state officials, you know, we can work out a solution. And from CCM's perspective, we'd very much like to see that recycling item go back into the revenue column from the expense column.
The mayor is going to be with us for the remainder of the program, but Kevin, I know I only have you for a few more minutes, so I just want to ask you one or two other questions. What are we talking about in terms of money for the individual towns? How much are they going to have to pay to make up for the slack nowadays?
Town of Fairfield was making a profit of maybe $50,000 to $100,000. Now they're going to have expenses of over $300,000. City of Stamford was generating about $100,000 in revenue. They are now having to pay close to $700,000 in expenses to get rid of their recycling. So it's become a real expense item. And when you have an expense, you've got to find a way to pay for it. And property taxpayers either get asked to pay more in their bill or towns have to find a way to balance the budget without a tax increase. So it's always been very challenging for any mayor. Certainly Mayor Blake and the other mayors in Connecticut to have a challenge in the spring each year trying to figure out how to balance their budget. And this yet presents one more challenge as we await what the state government will do regarding aid to cities and towns with the state legislature in session now.
Kevin, with the minute and a half that we have left, what would you like the state to do in terms of the recycling programs?
I think the Connecticut Department of Environmental Protection does need to step up, be more supportive about education programs in terms of what they can do, doing some changes in laws at the state level about packaging, you know, so there's less going in to the recycling stream, trying to promote things that change behavior of citizens to promote recycling more is always going to be very helpful, because if people are doing the right thing in terms of separating the recyclables and doing it well, that's going to be half the battle.
Kevin Maloney is Director of Communications and Member Relations for the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. Kevin, thank you. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Good luck with the rest of your program.
We're going to bring in Cheryl Baldwin. We've spoken with Cheryl in the past. She's Environmental Analyst with Recycle Connecticut. Cheryl, nice to have you back on the program.
Hi, thank you. And just to clarify, I'm with the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection.
I knew that, and my apologies.
That's okay.
How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
You spoke with us last time, and we were talking about how there may be some issues coming down the road, and you had indicated some of them and what the state should be doing, and it looks like those issues are here nowadays, right?
Yeah, we're definitely having some challenges.
How would you describe the situation in Connecticut?
Well, if people are reading the New York Times and other regional newspapers online or in print, you are reading about the China Sword and sort of people may be framing it like a crisis. However, in Connecticut, we're a little bit different, and I mentioned this before too, where we have mandated recycling, and so our facilities can't just sort of toss it aside. They have to process that material and recover it from municipalities and commercial businesses. And what we're finding is that the material is moving, but it's moving very slowly or at a cost. And so our facilities are not dumping materials. They are selling it, but sometimes they're having to pay a cost for that material to go to end market. And then what they're doing as a result is passing that cost on to our municipalities that are now beginning to feel the full cost associated with recovering these materials and these resources.
When you say end market, where is the end market?
So end markets are the companies that actually manufacture. If you weren't in the recycling business, you'd just consider them manufacturers. They make box boards. They make containers. They may also make a material that is sort of the in-between. Maybe they just make the pulp. Or maybe they make the paper, but they don't make the box, but they are definitely part of the system. In the plastics world, they may be making little pellets, and those pellets are then sent off to companies that make bottles and containers of some sort. And so those materials are sold to these end markets to make products out of these resources. I know your previous guest referred to getting rid of these materials, but I like to think that we're recovering these valuable resources so that these manufacturers can have these materials to make new products. And so usually our facilities might work directly with an end market in the region, but it might also be a broker. And often those brokers send them overseas, depending on where the markets are.
Speaking with some friends last night, and I was asking them about recycling, and I've got to be honest with you, a few of them simply said, you know, I just don't do it. And I do it diligently. It's one of the few good things that I do. And I'm proud of doing it, and I think it's good for the environment. How do you convince people who don't recycle now to actually go and do it the proper way?
Well, you know, there's always going to be a percentage of people that aren't going to care about anything.
like anything in life, right?
You know, that's right. They're gonna mix their colors and their whites in the wash, and they don't care what the instructions say on the detergent bottle. But we are focusing our efforts to educate people that are interested, and I would say it's about 65 to 75% of the population is doing it right, wants to do it right, is seeking out information to do it better. And it's concerned when they learn that they're not doing it right. I would say, you know, there's always about 6 to maybe 12% of the people that are never going to participate or perhaps are not interested. But it does mean that they're not also messing up our system.
Mayor Ben Blake, how do you convince the people in Milford to recycle and to do it the proper way? And as Cheryl said, not to mess up the system, which I think is a great way to put it.
Well, through education. But even in my own house, every week I have to go into my recycling tote and pick out what's appropriate, what's not. And it is. It's tough to stay up with what is recyclable. Every couple of years, that changes. You know, when we implemented in Milford the single stream recycling process back in 2011, there are a whole host of products that at that point were not recyclable, which are not in 2019. Things like chipboard, that was not. You know, even pizza boxes. People don't know which way pizza boxes go and whether how soiled the pizza boxes have to be to be.
I have to be honest. I'm confused about that. And I like pizza.
I can answer that for
sure,
you.
Please do.
Pizza boxes are acceptable, but no food.
So you can't have little pieces of cheese left in the box.
Yeah, pull out that cheese and shake it off so there's no crumbs or that little piece of olive. And the cardboard is wanted. The cardboard continues to have markets. And so if we're talking about where materials do have markets, cardboard is definitely one of them. Is it a strong market? Not so great, but it is a market regardless. And so that material is definitely wanted, and you should be putting that in your recycling bin.
So I have a basic question, and then I'd like to read some emails. If China is no longer taking our quote-unquote stuff, recycled materials, where is it going?
So I think that one of the things the state should be doing is incentivizing private industry to find new markets. You know, for example, I know that down in Florida, a lot of the glass that they have, they recycle as sand on the beach.
Right.
There's new concrete companies that are coming in where glass is an additive or the major additive to some of the concrete. So there are those secondary markets that have the potential for disposing of a lot of our recycling or reusing a lot of the products that we are putting into the single stream recycling system. And I think that we can explore that. You know, now that China is no longer taking a lot of what we used to ship over to them, we have that opportunity.
Cheryl, I remember from our last program, I don't know if it was you or someone else, and they said, well, if China no longer is going to take it, we should look at other places such as, and they were just throwing out names of countries, Vietnam and so on. Is there still a possibility of it going to other countries?
It already is, and it was before. It's just that some countries are now increasing their exports. Not everybody is, but some people are. And you got to remember, we have domestic markets, too, and those domestic markets exist. And as a result of China changing their requirements of what they're accepting and what they're not accepting in terms of our materials, we have a lot more markets that are actually developing. Are they going to be here tomorrow? No. But I would expect in the next year or so, we're going to see a lot more facilities that can handle both plastics as well as mixed paper. And the mixed paper is definitely going to be a great blessing when we have more facilities that can handle that domestically.
So you don't see the recycling program going away anytime soon. It sounds like you're saying that it's going to be expanded, right?
No. So the thing is markets have continued to fluctuate. They always fluctuate. However, municipalities used to actually pay for this service, and then they started receiving funds for that because we have more companies that are using those feedstocks in new products. Recycling is not just collection. Recycling is the making of new products, which we then purchase. And so I'm sorry I didn't catch the mayor's name from Milford, but he made a great point. We need to create new products, but we also need to purchase them. So the strength of the state actually would be to support industry in terms of manufacturing with recycled content. But it's also the purchasing. As a state and local governments, we have a lot of power in terms of our procurement. There's a great workshop coming up, actually up in April, and it's talking about how you can use certain materials in roadways. Can we use glass as an aggregate? Can we use compost on our roadways? Are there other materials? Can we start using more asphalt shingles in our road mixes? There's so many different ways in which to look at it, but we do seem to have a disconnect between the collection and the end markets and manufacturing locally.
Ben Blake is the mayor of Milford. And Mayor, is that something that could be done on a town-by-town basis? Can you mandate in the town and say, look, we need to use more of these materials in what we do in the town? If you buy something in terms of folders, paper, whatever, it has to have a certain recycled percentage. Is that something you can do?
Locally, we can and we have for certain things. We have initiatives that require what we purchase locally to be green, whether it's electricity. We had an initiative to go 20% green energy by 2020, and we've already hit that number. And so we have a lot of those initiatives already in place, but the leveraging power of the state is even more effective. And for a lot of the stuff, it makes sense to do it at either a state or a national level.
Cheryl, you know, we hear so much nowadays about the Green New Deal, and this sounds like it fits right in with that in some aspects.
Sure. The materials economy is definitely part of the green economy. It always has been. We have a pretty good industry here. You know, we have a lot of facilities that process materials. We have some facilities that actually are end markets as well. And so expanding that and supporting it as an industry in Connecticut would be an awesome thing. I support what Mayor Blake has said.
I just want to let everyone know that Michael Vitale will be joining us in our final segment. I just want to get to some of the emails. Ellen writes, just as I was pondering giving up takeout, I discovered that some communities have started a returnable to-go container program, cutting down on one-use waste. Would love to see that happen here. There are many different aspects to this, right?
Absolutely. Lots of different ideas out there. Some of them more effective than others. But I think the more ideas that are out there, the better.
Right. And as you were saying before, plastic bags are bad. And we hear a lot about plastic straws nowadays, returnable to-go container programs. Cheryl, there's so many different aspects. What is it that we're not considering at the moment?
Well, you know, we're talking a lot about recycling. And if you're looking at the materials management hierarchy and sort of what is the best management practice, waste reduction and reuse are the best. So this person that called about reusable containers, that's actually better than recycling because you're not having to deal with them and manage the materials. And so folks that are working on waste reduction and zero waste and trying to prevent the use of these materials is the way to go.
I'd like to bring up something that will really, I think, spark an interest for some people. I don't know about you, but where I live, I see so many trucks every day. The United States Postal Service, FedEx, UPS, and so on, and delivering packages from Amazon, from Walmart, Costco, you name it. I mean, everything's being delivered at this point, and that has to. And I see all the boxes coming through, and I'm thinking, how much waste are we all generating from this?
That's a great question. I don't know if anybody's done a study on that. Mayor Blake, I don't know if you know the answer to that.
I could just tell you that there are a lot of Amazon boxes on the doorsteps of a lot of houses in Milford and across the state. A lot of people, I think, would like to be the company that sold cardboard boxes to Amazon because it is a big business, equally as important as finding a way to dispose of or recycle that material.
And Cheryl, I understand completely what you were saying just a moment ago. You were basically talking about a change in habits. Don't buy things. Don't be wasteful. If you don't need it, don't buy it. It's good for the environment. Or if you buy something, make sure it goes back again. And in the meantime, it seems that by us buying things on the internet, it is counter to that way of thinking because nowadays you just buy something, you don't even think about it and just get it delivered. So it's being delivered by a truck, carbon and so on, and then cardboard boxes, not to mention the packaging.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, the life cycle analysis of purchasing online versus purchasing in a store, but I can tell you that about 18 to 19% of our recycling stream is cardboard. So we clearly generate, but we also collect a lot of cardboard to be recovered.
Hmm.
And I'm sure that's because of the online shopping.
Mayor, have you heard anything in your town where people are saying, you know what, if something is delivered to me, I would get to actually be in something environmentally safe. I don't need, if I'm buying a little package, to have a 4-foot-long cardboard box show up on my front door.
For a lot of people, that is first and foremost in their mind, you know, from an environmental and a green carbon footprint standpoint. Other people, they just don't want to have boxes clogging up their house. But I could tell you one of the things that's changed is a lot of towns, including mine, the size of the recycling bin or the tote has increased, which allows people to throw away cardboard easier than they had in the past with little or small blue recycling bins. Approximately 20% by weight of the products that we pick up at curbside are recycling, and we want to try to get it to be over 50%, obviously. But the fact that it's costing more now to recycle than it is to dispose of our municipal solid waste, as of July 1st, for each ton of recycling, it's going to cost us $75 a ton. And for municipal solid waste, it's only $61 a ton. So it's costing us a lot more for the tipping fee to get rid of that product as opposed to the normal municipal solid waste.
Eric tweets, I don't understand why both recycling and garbage removal aren't charged as you pay as you go, Otherwise, the incentive to reduce both is absent. Good point.
That is an excellent point. And I don't know if you know what he's referring to, but he's referring to an approach where you're looking at trash as a utility.
Right.
So it's instead of talking about the recycling side, you're talking about trash, and you treat it like a utility where you don't want to pay your neighbor's fee if they're watering their huge garden. You only have to pay for your own water. And likewise, it's paying for only the amount of trash that you generate. And what it does is it creates an incentive for people to actually rethink about what they're purchasing, how they're purchasing, and it definitely has them look at the rules for recycling and expand their recycling habits because they're having to pay for their trash.
It sounds like a great idea. So in other words, if I generate 5 huge bags of garbage, I'm going to pay X amount. If I only generate 1 bag, it's much less.
Exactly. And it's one of the services that the department actually supports, and we provide consulting. I know you had asked the question about how is the department supporting municipalities, and that's one of them. We provide technical assistance on a number of initiatives, and we call it SMART because we think it's a smart activity, which stands for Save Money and Reduce Trash. And we think it's a great way for municipalities to try to save funds, municipal funds that are definitely needed often in other places instead of paying for tip fees for trash.
Mike Vitale is joining us now. He's the owner of Great Northern Fibers. It's a full-service recycling company based in West Babylon. Mike, how are you today?
How are you?
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We appreciate your time. Tell us a little bit about Great Northern Fibers. What do you do?
Well, we're basically a full-service recycling company, as you mentioned, but our main focus is processing. We help a lot of the other recycling and waste companies in the area recycle their own material, and we show them better ways to be able to get that stream out of the garbage MSW stream through collection and programs, recycling programs.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it quite a long time. I'm fourth generation doing it, so I started when I was much younger, going through school, and I'd say 45 years at least, with a little time off in the middle. But I heard you say prior to me getting on about what we could do or what we did that was a little different than everybody, and it's actually in reverse. It's not what we did do, it's what we didn't do. And what we didn't do was go from our old core values of how to recycle and collect and keep things separate. Myself and another town supervisor by Angie Carpenter could never understand, when you have residents doing your labor for you, why you would throw that away or give it back and have them put everything into one bin and hope we're going to separate everything at the same quality that we were already at. And that was always something that kept me staying true to what my beliefs were and what a lot of us believe in the recycling business that have been doing this for so many years, that it's sometimes the older way is always the best way. And it seems to be in this case. Regarding China has always been buying from us because of our quality. And China is still buying, but even though the amount that they buy has curbed and cut down, they're still buying. They're still in the market. But like in other countries, too, that have picked up the slack with single stream, these other countries are all going to stop taking that material in as well, because at the end of the day, it's just not economically viable to take in contaminated material.
So China is still buying the goods from you because you have the goods.
I have the goods. Very well said, yes. But I spend a lot of money to make those goods in the quality that they need. And I don't have a problem with China. I respect their position. I know we wouldn't want to take garbage from out of our country. I think everybody be picketing and lining up. So I have to believe, you know, they're millennials now. What do they want? Clean water, clean air, jobs, things that all of our children want. So I think there's been a slight change in their culture as well that did this. And I believe India and other countries are going to get on the same bandwagon. So, you know, anything that's coming in and us thinking that we're going to get away with sending less quality material to other countries, it's, you know, that's short-lived too. That will end.
Mike Vitale is the owner of Great Northern Fibers in West Babylon. Mike, when many others were making the transition to single stream, did any of your customers come to you and say, look, it's a lot easier this new way. Why don't you just do it that way?
Sure. You know, it was, there were, believe me, we put a lot of thought and economic different aspects of the economics of it. Sure, it made sense from something they call windshield time of just pure trucking. It made sense. But at the end of the day, the material didn't make sense. So this was an economic seesaw going back and forth of which is the better mousetrap. And my position always was, because I've been doing it so long and always the core of our business was fiber and paper and the mills coming back to us. And even I remember 30 years ago coming back and asking, where's this glass coming from? And that's when the sound bells went off that this is coming from single stream, because glass breaks after you handle it and moves and the shards get in and it goes into their pumps. And what was happening is they were spending more money in maintenance costs of these mills to be able to make new pulp or rolls of paper or whatever, whether it was packaging or media. And it was just killing their budgets. And it came back to, what is it worth? Is it worth taking this material in and shutting down and keep changing these pumps that maybe they had 10 budgeted for the year, and instead they were putting 30 or 40 of these pumps in? It didn't. If at the end of the day, economics have to drive everything. If there's no legislation or public support, it's only going to be driven by economics, and the economics will take down anything that just doesn't make it viable. Yeah, it may work for a little while, but at the end of the day, it just doesn't do it, because nobody has the staying power to keep losing money, whether you're private, public, or anything. You just can't do it.
As someone said to me once, the answer to all your questions is money. Mike Vitale is owner of Great Northern Fibers. It's a full-service recycling company based in West Babylon. He's been doing it for 45 years. It sounds like recycling is in his blood. Ben Blake is the mayor of Milford, and Cheryl Baldwin is with Connecticut Deep. Cheryl, listening to what Mike has to say, do you think in some cases we almost need to take a step back in terms of the recycling program?
Yeah, I want to say kudos to you, Mr. Vitale, for not being pressured by by the need to go into a single stream system. I know when all the industry haulers really wanted to go in this direction to do single stream, just like you said, to try to reduce their costs. Those of us that had been in the industry for a long time definitely gritted our teeth because we weren't quite sure what was going to come out at the other end, and now we know, not the most valuable material. I think there are folks that are beginning to look at dual stream. That's what it was referred to before we started mixing it, where one stream is your fiber or your paper products, and then the other is your bottles and cans. And even though you had glass breakage at that point, you had a minimal glass breakage, and it did not contaminate paper, which it tends to be a large contaminant. And I think materials were much cleaner then. So you do have people that are already doing it in Connecticut, dual stream.
Mm-hmm.
But I think our facilities are not processing as dual stream. And I think there are more and more people that are looking into doing it. We also have some pilot projects happening in Connecticut. The Housatonic Resources Recovery Authority is sort of taking the lead and looking at, could we be collecting glass in a different way? They are collecting, I believe, from three different rural communities, collecting glass separately at the transfer station. And then they are hauling it themselves up to Strategic Materials in Connecticut, which is a glass manufacturer. They are an end market in Connecticut, but they only want clean glass. So they traditionally may buy it from the bottle bill folks that process glass. But now, if you have a source-separated material, it's going to be much more valuable, and that's what they are starting to do. So it's exciting to sort of see. We can't wait to hear their results and whether or not others might want to consider this or how we might proceed in the future.
Mayor, could we get your thoughts on that in terms of whether or not we should actually take a step back? Dual stream?
I think that we definitely need to consider source separating the glass out because it has such a contamination effect on the rest of our recycling. One of the things that would incentivize people not to throw it in the single stream recycling would be to have more products, glass products like nips, for example, to have a deposit associated with them. Some of them are plastic, some of them are glass, and perhaps even increase deposits for some of the things that presently don't have a deposit associated with them.
And for those who don't know, nips are?
Little alcohol bottles.
Little bottles of alcohol.
That are often strewn around in the parks and the beaches, and
mm-hmm.
Nobody wants them around, but I think people would be more incentivized to pick them up and take them back to get your 5-cent deposit or a 10-cent deposit even if they had some type of deposit associated with them.
One Long Island listener called in and told us styrofoam takes up 1/3 of landfills and many Long Island landfills won't take it. We need to address recycling and or banning styrofoam. Cheryl, I'm going to give you that one, please.
Okay. Well, I can tell you styrofoam, which is a brand name, is really polystyrene or extended polystyrene. That material is not acceptable in our recycling program. None of our facilities want it. And however, it is a small percentage for us. If we are looking at our waste characterization as well as our recycling characterization, 0.1% is expanded polystyrene. So from a weight perspective, it's pretty tiny. And of course, Connecticut also doesn't have landfills. All of that material is burned. However, I believe, Mike, maybe you, Ben, maybe you know, I believe there's legislation that's also looking at banning polystyrene at this point. I'm not sure where it's at. I'm not following it. But I think a lot of people are concerned that if we can't recover it, maybe we should be doing something else, like not using it.
A lot of the legislation that I know that's being proposed is actually done by students who see disposable polystyrene lunch trays every single day. And I think that a lot of the students are leaving the charge, at least the ones in my town. They've written the local legislators, the mayor, and have actually gotten together to propose ways to find alternatives for their lunch trays, whether it be recycled cardboard or trays that are reusable.
Mike Vitale, that goes back to what you were talking about a little bit earlier when you're saying that so many of the millennials they want clean water, they want clean land. And so they're the ones kind of pushing this. Do you have trouble educating different age groups in terms of recycling and what's acceptable and what's not?
Well, I think what's going on, the practices are so different around the country that it's How do you train your millennials when, depending on the market you're in, you have different hurdles, restraints, and whatnot? You know, it's funny you talk about the styrene. We put in programs where, you know, large generators of that same material where you can densify it with a densifier, and it comes out almost like the old Carvel ice cream, and it goes into a brick. It's very valuable, but like you said, try to collect it. That's the hard part. So where it's generated in large quantities, it works. The Northeast has always had its challenges because of single stream. I've heard saying, well, if we take the glass out, then single stream may be a little better and easier to handle. Moisture is the enemy. So when you're putting your containers out as a resident, they're coming to pick them up, no matter whether it's fiber, plastic, whatever, when that material is collected and then brought to a facility like mine, the more moisture content involved, the harder it is to separate to get the quality needed for China and other markets to buy. So by mixing everything together, that's why maybe in Arizona it does work, because it's drier air, the material can work. They have all kinds of automated systems now with optical sorters and one-armed bandits that are picking it up. Technology is catching up, but it's never going to catch up to Mother Nature. So it doesn't matter how clean the material is. You get it on a rainy day, a windy day, or a snowy day, that material hits the floor, you start separating, it just doesn't happen. So it goes back to what part of the country are you in? What part of the country depends on what the value of your material is? You know, once you get away from the ports, in the middle of the country, they don't worry about that because it's going to a domestic mill, and that's where I believe our future is. We have to be more self-sufficient as a country and handling this material, whether it's packaging, media, whatever it may be, that we need to be able to carry our own markets and handle our own material long term.
Ben Blake, Mayor of Milford, we have about 2-3 minutes left. Final thoughts on the recycling program in your community and how you see it evolving?
Just that it's here to stay. Everybody understands the need to be green. We would like it to move in the direction where it is not going to have as big of a cost pressure on our local municipal budget. We want there to be secondary markets that are available for the reuse of a lot of this material. And I think, again, just the way that our markets work, that's what happens, is that there is a void and it gets filled.
Cheryl Baldwin with Connecticut Deep. Your final thoughts, please, Cheryl.
I would say Connecticut is a little bit unique. We actually did create a one universal list of acceptable materials, working with all of our materials recycling facilities. And that list is actually, you can check it out on recyclect.com. We have materials that you can download. And if there you have a question, there's a search engine. You just like put in your thing about what your question is, and up will pop an answer about maybe you need to you can recycle it, but maybe not in your bin, or maybe you need to put it in your trash.
And the tweets from Recycle Connecticut are always good. I get them, and they're very informative and very interesting.
Great. But, thank you.
But here's the other thing too, Cheryl. It's from not to beat this drum too much, but from what you were saying before, it sounds like all of us simply have to do our homework, and we have to do a little bit more work if we want this to work.
Yeah, and I think we do need to, as everybody else has said, we need to make investments in this industry so that we are manufacturing more products using the feedstocks that we generate regionally, and buy those products and use them again.
Mike Vitale, you get the last word as the owner of Great Northern Fibers.
Well, and I want to thank you for having me. It's been a privilege to be on the radio with you guys, and I believe it's all our own responsibility. It's like I said, economically driven, unless legislatively the government gets involved, and I say switch back to dual stream.
Mike Vitale, owner of Great Northern Fibers. Cheryl Baldwin with Connecticut Deep. Mike Vitale, Cheryl, Mayor Ben Blake, thank you all. It was a pleasure having
you
here, and it was a great program. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is going to do it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. Our digital editor is Carrie Frank. J.D. Allen is our producer, and our senior producer is Ann Lopez. And, of course, our news director is Terry Sheridan. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story. We'll see you tomorrow.